Genesis chapter 38. Well, you know, in chapter 37, 10 of Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery. They were going to kill him, but they sold him into slavery. It's a loving, tight family, as you can see. Really committed and subject to the Lord, obviously. They're a mess. They're an absolute mess, this whole family. The wives, the children, Jacob himself is just barely coming around. Just barely taking the oversight of his ministry, which is his family there. This family's in desperate trouble. Now, we have a break between chapter 37 and 39. What I mean by that is chapter 37 ends with Joseph being sold into slavery. Chapter 39 begins with Joseph coming into Egypt and sold into slavery at the Potiphar's house. But chapter 38, takes a detour. And again, people say this: why even put this kind of yuck in there? Why not just, why go off into this whole Judah thing? Why do that? Watch. You'll be impressed with how smart God is. So he stops talking about Joseph for a second and he turns now. And this is what we read. Here's a short detour from the story of Joseph. We're going to look at Judah just for a chapter, not long. Judah and his family. Well, it came to pass at that time. What time? Oh, that time they sold Joseph. That time Judah went down from his brethren, turned into a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. And he took her and went into her. Notice he didn't marry her first. He took her and went into her. Now she's his wife. She conceived and bare a son and called his name Er. She conceived again and bare a son, and she called his name Onan. And she yet again conceived and bare a son and called his name Shelah. And he was at Chezib when she bare him. Here we stop. We left our hero on his way down to Egypt. The rest of the book of Genesis focuses on Joseph. But here's a chapter that just stops almost like he forgot what he was talking about, and he just goes off on some kind of rabbit trail, as some people call him, and he starts talking about Judah. God said this about Abraham. Remember Father Abraham? God said this about Abraham. Genesis 18:19. For I know him, the Lord says, speaking about Abraham, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord, to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. That's what God said about Abraham. God said, I know Abraham will raise his kids right. I know that my friend Abraham will tell Isaac about the Lord. And when Isaac was 33, he was willing to be sacrificed because that was God's will. And that's what his father said they should do. He was an obedient servant at 33 years old. God said, I know Abraham. He'll teach his family the right things. Sad to say, God didn't say that about Jacob. Notice, Jacob did not teach his children the right way. His children learned their way of life from living among the Canaanites, from living out there at Shechem, and all that. They did not know the Lord. They knew about him. They probably went to a few Sunday schools. You know, if Jacob and his wives got up early enough and they made it to church, then maybe the kids got Sunday school. But for the most part, they didn't get into that kind of thing. You know, they had a busy lifestyle. Jacob did not teach his children nor command his children to keep the ways of the Lord. He didn't command his children to do justice and judgment, except Joseph, his favorite. Joseph was a man of God. Joseph, out of the 12 boys, well, Benji is too little to deal with right now. But out of the 11 that are left, Joseph knows the Lord and trusts the Lord. The other 10 do not. What happened? Jacob had wives who worshiped false gods. He had an attitude that really wasn't into God. It was really into getting his way. This is what I want. This is how I want it to be. This is how I'd like to live. And because of it, those 10 boys were practically ruined. Here we see Judah. Judah was the fourth son of Jacob, one of Leah's kids. Judah, interestingly enough, is the one in the last chapter who suggested, let's not kill him, let's sell him, make a little money. That way his blood's not on our hands. That was Judah. Pretty sick dude, wouldn't you say? Let's get rid of him. I mean, let's make sure he's out of our lives forever, but let's sell him to the gypsies over here into slavery, and let's just see what comes of his dreams. Oh, he thinks that the older, that all of us are going to bow down to the younger. Remember God said about Jacob and Isaac before they were born that the elder would serve the younger. And of course, when Joseph had his dreams, they're going, oh yeah, right, you're the young one and we're going to bow down and serve you. Not going to happen, dude. And they said, let's just get rid of him, sell him into slavery. And Judah says, let's see what happens to his dreams then. You know, the elder's not going to serve the younger here. It's not going to happen. We're not going to bow down to this guy. We fixed it. After he sells his brother, the Bible says Judah took off from the rest of his family. Looks like he moved about 15 miles northwest up to a place called Adullam, where he meets an Adullamite named Hira, and they become buddies. They become friends. He's not hanging out with his brothers or with his family anymore. He moves about 15 miles away. He's got his own flocks and herds and et cetera. And now he's gone from the family for a while. He befriended Hira the Adullamite. And he ended up eventually marrying a Canaanite girl. Now, didn't Abraham say to his servant, don't let Isaac marry one of the girls from here. Go far away. And Eliezer says, well, what if it won't happen? What if I can't? Should I take? No, leave Isaac here. And then you're not under the vow. You're not under the promise if you can't find a girl from back there. But don't let him marry one of the girls from here. Well, Isaac, when he has the twins, don't you remember that he has Esau and Jacob, and Esau marries some of the girls from around there, remember? And the thorn in the flesh they were and the problems that they were. So they said, Jacob, you know, so this was his mother's excuse to get him to save his life. You can't let him marry one of these girls. You got to get him back where the girls are better. And you remember the story. I can't do the whole story. Well, see, here's Judah. He marries a Canaanite girl. And we're thinking, oh, Judah, man, you have gone from down to down to down. I hope nobody flushes. Because you're not doing so well, man. You're in there deep. They have three boys. Onan, and Shelah. Here we have God's chosen intermingling with the world. Something God did not want them to do. Something Abraham asked them not to do. Something Isaac asked them not to do. But you come down to Jacob and you got this shaky family going on. I mean, we're having a problem with those that we call the children of Israel. We're going to have to do something with them or they're going to destroy their own selves. They will destroy themselves. They are going to so intermingle that after a while they will not exist. That's what's going to happen. You can see it's coming. So God's going to have to do something drastic. What he's going to do, amazing plan, is he's going to take all of them, move them to a section of Egypt, the land of Goshen, where they will live all by themselves, away from the Egyptians and away from the Canaanites, where they can't intermarry. God's pretty good, isn't he? For over 400 years, he's going to just segregate them, separate them, lock them into their own little world so they can't do those kind of things. I don't want to get ahead of myself, though. We'll talk about that. That's coming up a little later. See, if it continues like this, there will be no Israel. There will be no chosen. They will have intermingled to their own non-existence. Verse 6 says this, and Judah, now he's got the three boys. He's living there about 15 miles from home. Judah took a wife for his firstborn. Her name was Tamar. Tamar means palm tree. She must have had really bushy hair. No, just kidding. Maybe she looked skinny. Like, I don't know. Just kidding. Maybe she had big ears and whatever. And Judah's firstborn, verse 7, was wicked. Oh man, you ought to underline this. This is cool. It was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. We're just not used to that, are we? Well, until we come to Acts chapter 5, and we got Ananias and Sapphira. Then you see them go down, and you lie to the Holy Spirit. Boom, they're dead. God killed Ur. Why? Because he was so wicked. Wait a minute. This is Judah's kid. How wicked can he be? Look at Judah. Judah sold his own brother into slavery. Well, verse 8 says, Judah said to Onan, go in unto thy brother's wife, marry her, raise up seed to thy brother. And Onan knew that the seed should not be his, wouldn't carry his name. And it came to pass, as he went in unto his brother's wife, that he spilled it on the ground, lest that he should give seed to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, so God killed him. Two down, one to go. Then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Shelah, my son, be grown. For he said this in his heart, lest peradventure he die also as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. Here's what's going on. Judah takes a wife for his oldest son. Remember, the responsibility of taking a wife wasn't the son's responsibility. You recall Abraham said to his servant, go and get a wife. The father sends him to get a wife for his son. And so you see right here, Judah says, okay, you know, my oldest died. Why? Well, he was wicked and the Lord slew him. So since he died, he says to, Judah says to his second son, he says, Onan, buddy, you need to marry your sister-in-law. You need to take her and she needs to have children. And when she does have children, those won't really be yours. The first son will be under the name of Ur. In Deuteronomy chapter, this was the practice of the land in those days. If you married a woman and you died and she didn't have any children, then your brother would have to marry her. So a lot of times that's why the family wanted to be involved in picking the woman. Because if you had three older brothers, you'd be wanting to know what this girl looked like and acted like, because sooner or later you could be married to her. So everybody got involved with choosing a wife for the oldest, for the son. You know, so. But in Deuteronomy 25, God puts this in his law. Deuteronomy 25, I'll read you verses 5 and 6, and you'll see that Israel continued this practice. Watch. If brethren dwell together, and one of them die, and he have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. She needs to stay in the family. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn, when she beareth, shall succeed in the name of his brother, which is dead, that his name, be not put out of Israel. So that Ur's name isn't dead and gone. The second brother comes along. If they have children, then the firstborn is accounted to the first brother. So his name lasts. They didn't want the families to die out. They didn't want the tribes to die out. So if son married a girl and he died, leaving no children, the next in line, the next brother, would then marry her. And hopefully they would have children. Well, Onan, he doesn't want the job. I mean, it's not that he doesn't like the girl, obviously. What he thinks is, if we have kids, it won't even be in my name. I'm wasting my time. So he refused to do it. And because he refused to do it, because of his heart attitude, the Lord puts him to death. Because he is not willing to take the place of his older brother and to help his older brother keep the name. So God, there now he's dead. So now Judah has a third son. But this kid is too young to get married. So Judah says to Tamar this, you go on home, put on the clothes of a widow, go on home. When the youngest is old enough, he'll be your husband. Till then, go on home, live with your father, live with your family. But Judah said in the back of his mind, in his heart, he's saying, man, there's something wrong with this Tamar girl. Both my sons married her, both of them are dead. Notice the sons were wicked, but Judah doesn't see it. He thinks something's wrong with this woman. I'm not giving my third son to her. He'll die too. It's very common that when there's sin in our lives, we have a tendency to blame it on somebody else. The sin was in Judah's family. Notice, the Bible clearly says the sin was in Judah's family. Judah doesn't see it that way. He thinks there's something wrong with this Canaanite woman. Jesus warned us about that in our own lives. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 3 through 5. Jesus said this, why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye? Mote is a speck of sawdust. But consider not the great plank that is in your own eye. Or how will you say to your brother, let me pull out the speck of sawdust out of your eye, and behold, there's a great plank in your own eye. He says, you hypocrite, first take out the great plank out of your own eye, then you could see clearly to take out the tiny speck of sawdust in your brother's eye. Judah, if you could just get right here, you'd realize it's not Tamar that's got the problem. You'd realize that you are wrong here. Your boys needed some comeuppance and they didn't get it. Now, Judah turns out to be just like his dad. Judah says to this girl, you go on home. Now, when he's old enough, I'll send him. We'll call for you and marry him. Judah never intended to do that. You see, weasel points. Here they are. And give him good 5 to 10 weasel points on this one because, this is going to be years. He said, the kid's young. So you're looking at years. Probably in years, she'll die off or something will happen. Verse 12 says, in the process of time, now we are looking at years and years. How long has Joseph been in slavery now? Years. Don't worry. We're going to get back and start over. We're going to cover some more time in the next chapter. But think about this. Now, Joseph has been gone years because Shelah was too young to be married. Now he's old enough basically to get married. So it's been years. In the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, she died. And Judah was comforted and went up to his unto his sheep shearers to Timnath, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, behold, your father-in-law is going up to Timnath to shear the sheep. And she put her widow's garments off from her. And she covered her with a veil and wrapped herself, which is the way the prostitutes did it in those days, and sat in an open place, which is by the way, on the path, on the road to Timnath. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given unto him to wife. She goes, all right, kid's old enough. That father-in-law, he lied. And he's on his way up here. So she heads over on the road there, and she dresses up just like a prostitute. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be a prostitute, a harlot, verse 15 says, because she covered her face. Notice, everyone, there's a certain way you could dress in those days and people would think you were a prostitute. And I want you to know there are certain ways that you can dress today and people will think you're a prostitute. So watch it just because it's in and the fads are that way. Be careful because we're Christians. Well, anyway, that was just an extra. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be a prostitute, a harlot, because she had covered her face. And he turned unto her by the way and said, and here's a turkey, this is Judah. He's hooking up with a prostitute. What kind of business does he have doing that? Say it with me. None. He says, go to, I pray thee. Let me come in unto thee. For he did not know she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what will you give me? Okay, well, look, you got to pay. What do you pay? That you may come in unto me. And he said, I'll send you a kid, a little goat from the flock. Boy, these kids. That kid got used to deceive Isaac. Kid got used to deceive Jacob. Oh, boy. And she said, wilt thou give me a pledge? Okay, the kid is with the flock. The flock's not here. What do you think I am? I'm not stupid. You need to leave me a pledge. You got to leave me kind of some earnest, some down payment. Make sure you're going to pay this thing. So he said, what pledge shall I give you? Verse 18. And she said, thy signet, thy seal is what that is, bracelets, and your staff that's in your hand. He goes, well, oh, okay. Gave it to her, came in unto her, and she conceived. Oh, bummer. Now she's pregnant from her father-in-law. What a great family. You kind of want to be a part of that. You know, you just kind of want to be a part. She got up, verse 19, rose, went away, laid by her veil from her, and put on her garments of widowhood. So she took off her harlot's clothes, went back and got in her normal stuff, went on back home to her dad's house. Judah sent the kid, that little goat, by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he couldn't find her. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, where is the prostitute that was openly by the wayside? And they said, there was no harlot in this place. He returned to Judah and said, I can't find her, verse 22. And also the men of the place said that there was no harlot in this place. There's no one there. And Judah said, let her take it to her, lest we be shamed. Behold, I sent this kid, and thou hast not found her. Years have gone by. Years. Shelah is old enough to get married, but Judah has no... He lied. He weaseled out. He had no intention of letting his third son marry Tamar. She had every right, because she was the wife of the first son. She had every right. It's not her fault. But he figured something's wrong with her, and he said he would send the kid, but he's not going to do it. He lied. He weaseled out. Years have gone by. He's out there sheep shearing over near Timnath. Him and his friend Hira headed up there. Tamar sees Shelah's grown man. Jacob has no intention of letting him marry her. He's not going to keep his promise. So she heads over to where Judah's going to be hanging out. She covers herself like a prostitute. Well, she sits by the road there. Here comes Judah. Long comes Judah, not suspecting nothing. Propositions her. What business did he have to do that? None. It was wrong. It was a sin. But you got to understand, this guy, as you can see from his past, he doesn't deal a lot with God. He's in his own world, basically. Tamar deceives Judah. just as there has been deceit in Judah's life, what goes around has come around. And now his own daughter-in-law. Jacob's family has been filled with deceit. It's like, you're never going to get this out of here. When is this cycle going to end? When is somebody going to stop this and begin to live righteously? Jacob had deceived his father. He lied to his father. He said, is this Joseph's coat? We found it all bloody and ripped up. We think wild animals got him. And Jacob broke down, and Judah says, sorry, Dad. Well, we're really sorry for him. Remember, they tried to comfort him, but he wouldn't be comforted. They were deceiving him. Weasel points. Thought Joseph had been killed. Judah had deceived his own father with his brothers. He had deceived Tamar, and he promised her the younger son. Now he himself gets deceived. He left her his seal, a little thing that you would sign forms with, a little stamp. He left her a seal, bracelets, and his staff, his shepherd's staff, as payment. Or his promise of payment. She conceived. She became pregnant with Judah's child. She put her widow's clothes back on, went on home. Now Judah sends the payment back to the prostitute by his friend Hira. Hira couldn't find her anywhere. So he asked some people there, where's that prostitute that sits here by the road? They go, there's no prostitute that sits by. There's never been a prostitute that sits by the road. Well, my friend of mine, I brought this kid. She was here. We don't know. There's no such thing. Okay, thanks. He goes back and says, we can't find her. Jacob's response? Listen closely. Well, she's got my stuff. I mean, you're a witness. At least I tried to pay. She's got my stuff. If we make a big stink about this now, we go try to find her and try to find my staff and all that stuff. Well, this is going to be kind of embarrassing. So let's just leave it alone. You know, let's just weasel points. Just weasel out. It's okay. Just leave it alone. No one will know. Everything. She's happy because she's got stuff. And I'm happy because, you know, it's all. Nobody's going to know. Let's cover it. Let's weasel away. Let's just act like it never happened and go on with life. And I know that many do that today. This is okay. Well, it's all right. Let's just. Well, good. I got away with that. We can weasel around this one. It's okay. No, it's all right. He says, we'll embarrass ourselves if we try to push this, so let's just leave it alone. She can keep my seal, my bracelets, and my staff. It'll be okay. Weasel points. Look at verse 24. You might have known this was going to happen. And it came to pass about 3 months after, she's now showing, is what they say in the trade. It was told Judah, saying, Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot, and behold, she is with child by whoredom, prostitution. She got pregnant. She got herself pregnant by playing a prostitute. And Judah says, bring her forth and let her be burnt. You have to put her to death. That's the punishment for prostitution. The death sentence. It will remain the punishment when they enter into the promised land when the law is given. Prostitution is a death sentence, not just the prostitute, but who's ever with her. And you can find that in the books of the law. Well, when she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law saying, by the man whose these are, am I with child? And she said, you discern, I pray thee, whose are these? The seal, the bracelets, and the staff. Here you go, Judah. You tell me who these are. It's by this person that I'm pregnant. And Judah acknowledged them and said, she has been more righteous than I, because I gave her not to Shelah, my son. And he knew her again no more. It means he didn't come near her ever again. Although those are his children. 3 months later, guess what? Everybody knows Tamar's pregnant. Ooh, words around. Hear about Tamar? She's pregnant, you know. Judah gets the news. What is it? They say, hey, Tamar, your daughter-in-law is pregnant. I think she's been playing the prostitute. She's been whoring around. He says, let's put her to death. Prostitution was a no-no, even in the land there among the Canaanites, except for temple prostitution. When one was caught, one was put to death. Now he's ready to have her put to death. How could she do such an ugly, unrighteous thing? Judah goes, kill her. Off with her head. Mr. Weasel wants her put to death. Do you recall the story that the prophet Nathan told David? David had committed adultery with Bathsheba, and he thought nobody knew. So Nathan comes in one day and tells him this story about a rich man who has all kinds of lambs and sheep and stuff, and a poor man who only has one little ewe lamb. He loves that one like it's family. And the rich man has friends come into town, and instead of taking one from his flock, he goes to the poor man, takes the only ewe lamb he has, and he slaughters that ewe lamb. Nathan says, that happened in your kingdom, David. And what did David say? Kill him. Bring him out here. That guy needs to die today, right now. And Nathan said, you are the man. Remember that? David was quick to condemn. Judah is quick to condemn his daughter-in-law. She's got to be killed. Got to burn her. And again, it reminds me of what Jesus told us. First, take the great plank out of our own eye. Then we could see clearly to help others with that little speck of sawdust that's in theirs. Judah is so filled with sin that he has no room to be yelling off with anybody's head. Do you understand that, Christian? Let it sink in. When you yourself, Jesus tells a story. If you don't like stories, because I've heard people say, man, I get tired of when pastors tell stories in church. If you don't like stories, you would not have liked listening to Jesus. He told stories for everything. I mean, you're in Simon's house and some weird woman walks in and everybody complains. And so Jesus tells a story. You're walking down the road and a bunch of people start crowding in. And so Jesus looks around and says, let me tell you guys a story. God doesn't work on a double standard. He doesn't work on double standards. And Jesus tells a story. He said there once was a man who decided to settle the accounts with the men who served him. And at the onset, there appeared a man that came before this rich man whose debt ran into the millions. And so he said to the man, pay me what you owe me. And the man said, I don't have it. And so he said, all right, take this man and sell him and his wife and his children and everything he has. And since he has no income, sell him, and whatever he gets, at least I'll get something rather than nothing. Sell him and just, I don't care what happens to him, sell him and give me whatever you get. And the man fell down before this rich ruler and said, oh, be patient with me and I will pay you in full. And the rich ruler looked at him and knew, this man can't earn a penny. He'll never pay me. In his heart, he thought, this is so pathetic. He had mercy on him and said, you know what? Get up. You're forgiven. The debt is gone. You owe me nothing. He felt so much compassion for this poor guy who said, be patient with me and I'll pay you. And he thought, this guy will never pay. He can't. So he forgave the debt. That man who was forgiven, Jesus said, walked out. Saw a guy that owed him $10. He just was forgiven millions of dollars of debt. He walked out on the street. One of the first guys he ran into was a guy that owed him $10. And this guy had a job. And he said, he grabs him by the throat and says, you pay me what you owe me. And the guy falls down and says, oh, be patient with me and I will pay you in full. And he goes, no way, I want my $10 now. So he throws him into prison, into the dungeon. And he can't come out of there until he pays the last penny. And Jesus said, and so the rich ruler, when he heard about it, sent for the man. What's the point? Judah, you are so steeped in your own sin. I wouldn't be yelling out that Tamar needs to be put to death. David, I wouldn't be cursing people to die, when the truth is, that's your sin that you're seeing. You know, Tamar says the father of the child is the owner of the seal, the bracelets, and the staff. Tamar, by all rights, according to Scripture, should have been the mother of Judah's family, because Judah chose her for his son. His son didn't have children. The second son didn't want children. The third son was waiting, and he was old enough. Judah refused to let it happen. But by rights, according to Scripture, Tamar should be the mother of the family of Judah, Judah's children. And sure enough, she turns out to be the mother of Judah's children, doesn't she? Don't you find it amazing that God's will be done? No matter how many weasel points you accumulate or I accumulate, that God's will be accomplished. She took a big chance. She will carry on the name of the family of Judah, having Judah's own children. She took a big chance because she could have been put to death. And Judah does, this will give him, he does confess. And he says, she's been more righteous than me. I'm a sinner. David said the same thing. I have sinned against you and you alone, Lord. And he never came near her again, although that was the mother of his, some more of his children. He never came near her again. Well, look at verse 27. When it came to pass, in the time of her travail, birth pains, when she goes into labor, that behold, twins were in her womb. And it came to pass when she travailed, when she was in labor, that the one twin, put out his hand. And the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, this is the firstborn. The first body part that comes out, that's the firstborn. They tied a little scarlet thread around it. And it came to pass, as he drew back, verse 29, back his hand, that behold, his brother came out. Okay, now think about it hard. The little baby sticks his hand out. The midwife quick grabs, because see, the first body part that comes out, that's the firstborn. That's the rule. So she quick grabs scarlet thread, ties it on this little bitty wrist. Kid pulls his hand back in. Next thing you know, next baby, the other baby comes out first. Breach. And she said, how hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee. And so she named him Breach. You grow up with him. What's your name? Breach? Want to make some of it? Perez is his name. And afterward came out really the firstborn, who was born second, his brother, that had the scarlet thread upon his hand. And his name was called Zerah. Zerah means scarlet. Frankly, scarlet, that's too bad. Tamar had twins. That wasn't expected. One baby put his hand out, midwife quick grabs a scarlet thread, wraps around the baby's wrist. Baby drew his hand back, and the other little boy came out first. Two boys. So the one that was born, now don't let me lose you. The one that was born first was the second born, was not the elder. Now think hard. The one that was born first was the younger. That's important for you to know, because you've heard that somewhere before. That was way back when Isaac learned he's got two boys on the way and the elder will serve the younger. Think back now. Listen to this. It was important to be first. The first got the blessing. The first got the birthright. He would receive all the blessing. Well, instead of the baby with the red scarlet string, it was the other baby. The baby that was considered the younger would now rule over the elder. The younger, or let me turn it around, the elder would now serve the younger again. Oh my goodness, you can't get away from it. Judah and his brothers said this, "We're not going to serve you, Joseph. We'll mess up your whole game. We're not serving you. Yeah, you'll see if we serve you." And they were going to kill him. Instead, Judah came up with the idea to sell him into slavery. They sell him into slavery and they say, "We'll never serve you. See, you're gone, man. You're good as dead. We'll never see you again. The elder will not bow down to the younger." And God says, "Oh, Judah, let me show you something. The elder once again will serve you. You are not going to get away with this. You're not going to forget it, even in your own life." They thought they could stop this whole plan by selling their brother, but it didn't work. And here's a little reminder: when Judah's twins are born, even when you don't care anything about God, notice God continues to keep his promise. Even when you don't care, even when you are working your points way up in weasel points, God still continues to say, "My will be accomplished in this world." Jesus taught us to pray, "Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven." Those that are truly his ask that his will is accomplished. It's almost like God is saying to Judah, "See, Judah, you will bow down before your brother. The older will all bow down to the younger. They will. I've got a plan." They named the first baby Breach and the other baby Scarlet. God's will worked out just as he promised. Now listen to this. All that chapter for God to show us, "I'm still in control." Yeah, but look what Judah did. "I am still in control." Judah will be sorry. He's already sorry. He's ashamed. He's embarrassed. He's weaseled. He's deceived. It's continuing on in his family. It's continuing on in Reuben's. It's continuing on in Simeon. It continues on in the 10 boys without slowing down. But God says, "I work it out just as I promised. And it will be through," and this has got to amaze you, "it will be through Judah, the line of Judah, not through Scarlet, but through Perez, but through Breach, that Messiah will come." Through the line of Judah, through Breach, Messiah will come. As you look at chapter 1 of the book of Matthew, when you look at that, you say, "Oh, it's kind of boring." Is it? Listen to verses 2 and 3. "Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob begat Judah and his brethren." Notice he doesn't talk about Reuben, doesn't talk about Simeon, doesn't talk about Joseph, doesn't talk about Levi. He talks about Judah. One of the big weasels of the bunch. One of the ones that you thought, "Man, could anything good come from this Judah cat?" "And Jacob begat Judah and his brother. And Judah begat Perez and Zerah of Tamar. And Perez begat Esrom. And Esrom begat Aram." And of course, I'm not going to go on until I get to verse 16. Because you can read all the begets. In verse 16, "And Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Messiah." You'll trace the lineage in Matthew from Abraham to Joseph, and you'll trace the lineage in Luke from Abraham through Mary. And God has shown us he will prevail. You will bow down before your younger brother. Even though you sold him into slavery and you think that you've gotten him off your back and you've weaseled out of a lot of things, you will bow down before him, just as the dream said, just as he told you. And then God turns around and in grace and in mercy uses a lady that played a prostitute. Uses a man who had no idea that this prostitute was his daughter-in-law. And from those two, the lineage comes down to Jesus. And in that lineage, you're going to find another prostitute, Rahab. You're going to find a girl named Ruth, who comes from Moab. God says, Moab is my washpot. He doesn't have a high opinion of that land because of the way the people treated his children. Through that lineage, God will use those hearts that are willing, that are there. What amazes me through all of this is that even today, while you sit and say, Lord, I want to do it your way, or while you even say, I'm getting weasel points because I got away with it, I'll never get caught, even through it all, God will work his will. And, of course, any of us who live outside of that or in disobedience, we will always, always get caught and always be sorry. Judah was sorry. He was embarrassed. He was ashamed. You can imagine the reputation in the neighborhood. Eventually, he's going to have to head back home. And when he does, he'll eventually end up in Egypt. But God is also seeing, if you let Judah and Reuben and Simeon, all the guys, if you let them continue on their own, they're going to destroy themselves. So God will take them all and put them in a land called Goshen, separated from other humans. The Israelites will be slaves there, and they will be separated away from all those Canaanites, away from Egypt, away from all. That was the way God kept them pure. In other words, God has a plan. When you look around today and you think, oh my goodness, we're losing it. The church is falling apart. I mean, most of the church is just like the world. What are we going to do? God has a plan, and those that are truly his, he's working, and he's got a plan. You'll see. The church will still be when Jesus Christ comes to get it, whatever that day and that hour is. But be encouraged and know, even when others take their own path, God is in control. Don't give up on them. Pray for them. If they're truly his, if they are truly his, even if they're in the mud with the pigs ready to eat, they will come to themselves and come home. If they're just pigs, they will stay. You can clean, as Jay Vernon says, you can clean a pig off, but the pig will go back to the mud. But when you get a prodigal son or a prodigal daughter and they get cleaned off, they'll stay out of the mud once again. So maybe you know some family, some friends who are kind of ready to eat with the pigs hanging out in the mud there. Pray for them. Don't give up on them, because you know if they truly belong to him, God is working. Let's bow our heads together.